This is Tall Tale TV, your podcast for sci-fi and fantasy short stories. This story has multiple parts. To listen to the entire story in one place, visit talltaletv.com/series. Of Portals and Portents by Leslie Herron. Chapter 20, Lazurite. Brick by brick, hand over hand, Theodore climbed his way along the cramped exterior of an old two-story house that was as narrow as it was tall. The pain in his injured arm had begun to spread, making this normally easy task problematic. The joints of his wrist and fingers had grown tight, and where he meant to simply grab hold of something, he often crushed it to dust. He propped his back foot up against the latticework arbor from the neighboring house and pushed himself up onto a windowsill. The room beyond was dark, and Theodore carefully peered inside. Just another office. His father must have an obsession with untidy workspaces, he thought, as he shimmied along to the next window. Theodore sighed and reached out to grab the next windowsill when his footing faltered and he crunched the wooden ledge between his fingers. He looked down into the darkening space between the two homes with a shuddering breath. He wasn't worried about the fall itself, but he had seen a large, copper-furred dog patrolling the area earlier that evening. Barking would wake the household, at which point he may as well have used the front door. He wasn't sure he could face his father right now without doing something he would regret. Readjusting his footing, Theodore moved to the remains of the crumpled windowsill. This would be the fourth room he'd inspected tonight, and it too was dark. He pulled himself up, careful to avoid placing pressure on his injured arm. There was a bed, a tidy desk, and, glinting off the light of a nearby street lamp, was an old framed portrait. He snorted inwardly as he could make out himself and his sister posing with their adoptive parents. They had been good people. Well, good enough. Moving his weight to his legs, he supported himself enough to ease the window open. It creaked gently before sliding up enough to allow him entry. He shifted again, and Theodore slipped into the room that belonged to his sister. The distance to the floor was more than he had estimated in the dark, and he fell the last few feet, landing with a noisy thud against the wooden floorboards. He remained motionless for a moment, hoping his less-than-graceful entry hadn't woken anyone. But as he turned, he was met with the grinning muzzle of the reddish-brown dog he had spotted earlier. It gave him a sniff, and its expression shifted from confused to happy as it slathered his face in wet kisses.
"Oh, gross! Get off!"
Theodore hissed as he pushed himself into a sitting position. He scanned the room, his eyes slow to adjust. But rather than his sister, the first thing he spotted was the wooden chair being swung at his head. It shattered across his face, exploding into a hail of splintered wood, followed swiftly by a foot sinking into his chest that slammed him to the ground and pinned him there. The dog started barking, running excited laps around the room.
"Who are you? Why are you in my room?"
Danny leaned in, grinding her heel down.
"Danny, get off!"
She leaned in, squinting in the darkness.
"Theo?"
She looked up to the window, then back down at him.
"What are you doing here?"
"I..."
"Danny!"
Chester's voice rose through the floorboards, followed by a series of distant thumps and thuds. She sighed.
"Looks like your antics have woken up Father."
"My antics? And can you please get off?"
"What did you expect?"
Danny lifted her foot off him with a shrug before moving to the door.
"A strange man snuck into the room of a sleeping, defenseless woman."
"What are you doing? Don't invite him in."
Theodore quickly pushed himself to his hands and knees.
"Why not?"
"Because I'm not ready to speak with him."
Danny threw her hands up in frustration and gestured wildly around the room.
"Then find a place to hide, you idiot."
"You have no closet."
She let out a noise of indignation and pointed furiously to the gap between the floor and her bed. She heard her name echoed through the halls of the second landing once more, as Theo dove under the bed, pulling the blankets lower over the edge to help him hide. The door burst open, and a half-dressed man pounced inside, wielding an umbrella like a club.
"What is it? What's going on? I heard noises."
Chester brandished his weapon, puncturing the air frantically as his eyes adjusted to the dark.
"Father, you can't just burst into my room without knocking first."
Danny reached over and flicked the light switch. A warm glow filled the small, tidy space, and Chester's eyes finally adjusted. His daughter stood there scowling at him in her nightgown as her excitable dog bounded around the room. He nodded at the shattered remains of a chair.
"Were you attacked?"
She glanced at the broken bits of wood with a shrug.
"There was a mouse."
"Ah."
He took a step back with a nervous cough.
"So, no one broke in?"
"Other than you?"
Chester laughed. It was a shaky, tiny chuckle.
"I see. Sorry about that. Just the thought of someone trying to harm you, I..."
He stopped when he noticed the hound, Sam, stop running around the room and half dove under the bed, his tail thumping happily against the floorboards. He looked back to the half-opened window and realized his mistake. He calmed his nerves with several deep breaths and moved his hand back to the doorknob.
"I'm sorry. I've just been on edge lately, and I was worried."
"It's all right."
Danny relaxed her shoulders and offered him a smile.
"It's been a long day. Go back to sleep, and I'll see you in the morning."
Chester nodded, pulling his hand away from the knob to lean the umbrella next to her writing desk.
"In case someone does break in."
He reached for the door once more.
Don't forget, we have a meeting with the Scholar and Ruby tomorrow to go over the rescue effort and inspect the new shipment of building materials."
He looked down at the dog to see him still tucked under the bed, his tail wagging furiously. He smiled, but said nothing as he shut the door behind him. Danny waited several moments, giving her father time to get back downstairs before she allowed herself a sigh of relief. Leaning over the bed, she shooed Sam out of the way and motioned for her brother to come out. Theodore ran his sleeve across his face, wiping the dog slobber off it, before he climbed up onto the foot of the bed.
"Are you going to tell me why you snuck into my room in the middle of the night instead of just knocking on the front door? Why are you avoiding Father?"
She joined him on the bed, Sam bounding up to sit between them. She watched her brother closely, noting that he looked pale, paler than usual. Something was eating at him.
"Are you all right?"
He reached out and grabbed her hand.
"Danny, I think I found out why Mom abandoned us." "For the last time, no, I do not have a thing for the Queen."
Vel let out a frustrated sigh, folding his arms across his chest.
"Mm-hmm."
Undine cocked an incredulous brow at the cyborg, but there was a knowing smile playing around the corners of her lips.
"I have never seen someone so smitten before."
"Maybe, but not with her."
Letting out an angry growl, Vel leaned back against the prow of the canoe, staring up at the flickering remnants of the fading glowworm light. He licked his lips as he formed the words in his mouth.
"Trust me, she isn't my type. She just, in my fevered state, she reminded me of someone I lost."
He could tell by the silence that weighed heavy between them that the dryad was waiting for further explanation. Vel sighed and gave a flick of his mechanical wrist.
"I don't feel like getting into it at the moment. It's complicated."
"If you say so. I'm just glad I don't have to carry you around anymore."
Vel grunted. Amy was still in safe mode, rebooting his functions as she rooted out the cause of the critical failure. His arm still felt like it was about to fall off, and he was exhausted from the ravaging fever. But the nightmarish hallucinations had stopped, so at least there was that.
What about you? Why are you back here with me and not up in that boat?
The dryad tensed. You were in such a state, Her Majesty was worried that the Cavalli would let you drown should you fall in. And look, she was right.
Undine smiled.
You did fall in.
At the expression on the man's face, that tickle of a grin cracked, and she belted out a bark of laughter.
Funny.
Vel rolled his eyes, sitting up. He knew it was more than that. It was hard to separate fever dream from reality, but he remembered enough to piece together that the dryad was likely feeling guilty over their current predicament.
Don't beat yourself up too long because of this. Sometimes being overprotective makes the best of us do really stupid stuff.
Undine didn't respond. He was right, and in the long run, she could learn to forgive herself for putting the queen in harm's way. But for now, he didn't need to know that. Up ahead, she could see the glow of firelight, and their guide shouted a few words of Kivalayan. From the lead canoe, Pyra turned round in her seat and called back,
"He says we're nearing the exit."
"Hey, can I ask you something?"
Vel returned his gaze to the cavern ceiling, watching the last of the glowworms fade from sight as the darkness receded. He was ready to leave the cenote and its damp, musky smell that caused his eyes to water and his throat to burn. He sat up, careful to avoid looking at the glassy surface of the water. It made his stomach turn every time he did. Undine pushed off with the oar, keeping the pace of their boat steady with the others.
"Yes, you may, but remember, the queen is married."
Shaking his head slightly, Vel put words to the curiosity that had been itching at him since the moment he met Pyra's guardian.
Your horns. Do...
He gestured at his own head with his mechanical hand.
"Do all dryads have them?"
Clearly not a question she had been expecting, Undine was thrown off for only a moment. She paused her rowing as she answered.
"Not all dryads have them, no. Only those of royal lineage. They are a gift from our goddess and a symbol of our station as protectors of the wilds."
"So you're what, a princess?"
She paused again before dipping the oar back in the water.
Something like that.
He allowed himself a small smile, and Vel leaned back into the canoe. As they rounded a bend, they abruptly reached a dead end in the massive cavern. A fissure in the ceiling was allowing a shaft of gray sunlight to flood the cenote, illuminating everything below, alongside the flickering orange glow of torchlight. A small jetty had formed over the years from the remains of the caved-in roof, and sitting on a stump near the water's edge was some sort of gangly, waterlogged gremlin. Vel, despite being comfortable with seeing the unusual and abnormal, was thrown off by the creature. It was roughly the size of a child, with patches of its sagging skin covered in thick brown fur, and arms so long that it had to bend its elbows to keep from dragging its hands as it walked. It turned its overlarge head at the sound of their approach, its giant ears flapping up and down as it did. It let out a sharp, piercing noise and jumped to its feet, staring at them with one large eye. Perhaps it was simply the fading memory of his delirium that made Vel shudder at the sight of that large orb, or maybe it was because he could see more of these creatures poking their heads out from the various snake holes that lined the cavern walls. But the Kivalayan guide spoke several words to the tiny beast on the island, and it scurried off towards the back of the cave. There, on a broken pedestal, sat an old, beaten-up gong, one of its wooden supports threatening to collapse under its own weight. The creature reached back with balled fists and began hammering against the polished disc like a boxer attacking a punching bag. The off-key sounds rang out with no sense of rhythm, just a cacophony of ear-piercing noise. Turning his attention away from the creature, Vel noticed that Undine had stepped out of the canoe and was tethering it off to a haphazard dock that had been pieced together with the rubble that had fallen through the gap. In the crumbled rock, he could see a weather-worn path carved out of the limestone from countless years of erosion. It was slick with moisture and ascended up the side of the cenote, creating a rather treacherous exit path. With her assistance, he slowly and painfully exited the boat. His body felt like it was wrapped in lead weights, and he couldn't breathe deep enough to catch his breath. As soon as he was free of the dock, he collapsed onto a large stone and waited for the others. From his vantage, he could see the treacherous walkway had been illuminated by a series of torches, obviously the source of the flickering light he had seen. He did not look forward to scaling that in his current state. At least it was well lit. He did a double take. The flames weren't actually attached to any wooden torch, but rather hovered a few inches from the wall just above head height. He reflexively opened his mouth to ask Amy what was going on when he remembered she was still in safe mode. He was forced to simply stare at them, slack-jawed. "I take it you have never seen magic before." The queen approached him, careful not to disturb her arm in its sling. She smiled when the cyborg returned her question with a dumbfounded look and a shake of his head. "Your brother once tried to explain the science of it. At least that's the word he used. Honestly, I think he was just trying to rationalize the irrational." Pyra turned to the nearest torch. "This is nothing more than a fire spell, cast here, I presume, to save the time of having to send someone down each day to light them." Vel raised an eyebrow.
"Eric has been trapped in a world where magic is real?"
He laughed.
"He must have hated that."
Pyra nodded. "At first, now he is quite the accomplished magician."
"Yeah, wait, what?"
Vel looked at her, dumbfounded.
"Magician?"
Undine leaned over the embankment to peer up into the gap in the ceiling. "Did our guide explain to you where we are?" The sky above looked familiar, and the faint scent of rain was quickly whisked away by the pungent odor of the cave. "He did not have much to say, unfortunately, and of what he did say, I understood even less." Shaking her head, Pyra turned back to the Cavalli to see he had moored off the two boats filled with gold. A horde of the waterlogged gremlins began to unload the contents, moving them from the canoes to large bags, as another group replaced the treasures with barrels of food, steel ingots, bolts of fabric, and other sordid goods. In less than 5 minutes, the transaction was complete, and their guide was climbing back into his canoe, wrapping a lead around the prow of the second empty boat. Pyra bowed as she scoured her mind for the proper words.
"Great thanks. Farewell."
She made a mental note to study up on her dead languages when she returned home. Hefting his oar into the air, the Cavalli responded only with a short bow of his own before he began rowing back the way they had come.
"Now what?"
Vel looked around at the tiny creatures piling the gold next to the gong, the one gremlin still pounding away. There was a moment where the three looked at one another, unsure, when the sound of shuffling, rocks hitting the water, and heavy grunts punctuated the tuneless sound of the hammered metal. They turned to see two heavily muscled guards carrying a covered palanquin between them, ambling down the steep path. As they reached the bottom, a gravelly voice shouted,
"We heard you the first 10 minutes. Shut up already."
The gremlin musician gave a yelp and scurried off down one of the snake holes. Pyra recognized that voice. She turned to see the small, squat form of the bandit queen hop down from the vehicle.
This shipment is early. I don't like surprises. If I'm short even one copper's worth, those elder roaches will not hear the last of this.
Vel shouldn't have been surprised. Not anymore after all the duplicates he had encountered, But he couldn't keep his jaw from slackening at the sight of a familiar, tight bun of black hair. Her skin was green, but there was no denying the resemblance.
Granny?
The bandit queen pulled to a stop, suddenly aware that she and her guards weren't alone in the cavern. She threw out her cane, halting the trolls and staring up at the gathered party. She relaxed, however, when she recognized the faces of Pyra, her guardian, and... was that the prince? Not quite. She leaned into the dim cavern light and laughed.
I ain't your granny, but for you, handsome, I'd be willing to be your sugar mama.
Dani let out a long exhale as she pulled her fingers away from her brother's arm.
That's a lot to take in.
Her eyes moved from the fractured crystals in his arm, and her hand rose to the odd wound on her own shoulder.
And you think the same is happening to me?
It wasn't a question.
I'm sorry.
She shook the building tears and the worries from her eyes.
Don't be. I'm glad you told me. And I think you're right. Perhaps abandoning us on a world with no magic was our mother's attempt to save us. The portals closed soon after. That could explain why she never came back.
Dani offered her brother a small smile.
I think we should tell Chester, though. He is our father, and he deserves to know. He might even be able to help us with our condition.
Theodore shook his head as he reached into his pockets.
I have something that might help. Elias and his idiot doppelganger were holed up in that tower for at least 3 months, tinkering with stuff like this.
He held out the remnants of the shackles he had freed Wilfred from. He had snapped off the loops that held the chains, leaving only a pair of clunky, locking bracelets.
Somehow, these deflect magic and can slow your crystals from getting worse. They're not perfect, and you need to avoid getting close to anyone using magic, but they should help. That's the theory, anyway.
He looked up at her, unable to shake the quiver from his voice. Dani put her hand on her brother's. She wasn't used to seeing emotion from him.
You're farther along than I am. Why don't you take them while we look for a better solution together?
The corners of his mouth twitched up. She always was the logical one, to the point of being infuriating. Normally, he was against lying. It just caused too much headache to keep track of every fib told. But just this once, for her sake, Theodore allowed himself a little white lie.
There's another pair back at the tower. Or just haven't been over there yet. I'm headed that way now. But first, I need you to put these on and...
Please, don't run off again.
The gentle touch she had on his hand turned into a grip as Dani struggled to hold onto her brother.
Father and I have a meeting with the scholar this morning. Please, please stay.
Tears were leaking from the corners of her eyes.
We can ask him for help. The technology they possess is beyond words. The machines and gizmos I've seen. They even have these devices that open doors to other locations. Surely they could help.
A tightness gripped him in the chest, filling Theodore with an ache he was sure had nothing to do with the crystal disease. How many years had it been since he'd seen his sister cry? Not since the days before their adoption, fighting for every scrap they earned in the orphanage. His chest heaved up and down, and he fought back his own tears. He threw his arms around his sister, ignoring the physical pain it caused him, and pulled her in close.
It'll be okay. I told you, I have my own coughs.
He let her sob against him, knowing she was just as scared as he was.
And I already have a plan to fix this, all right? We've always done things together, and I won't let you do this alone.
He pulled away and brushed the tears from her face before gently snapping the cuffs into place on her wrists. Danny ran the back of her sleeve across her face, clearing her nose with a sniff.
"Are you sure?"
Theodore smiled as he climbed to his feet, looking down at her. He ran his finger in an X over the left pocket of his shirt.
"Cross my heart."
He looked towards the window and could see the tickle of dawn approaching. He hadn't realized how long they had talked.
"I'll have to go now, but I'll be back, okay?"
Danny nodded with a shuddering breath.
"All right."
When he stepped towards the open window, she shook her head.
"Just go out through the front door. Father's a sound sleeper. I don't think you'll wake him."
Thankful he wouldn't have to scale down a two-story building, given the agony he was in, Theodore nodded and turned to reach for the door. When their eyes met, he could tell she was still worried. So he crossed his heart once more with his finger and stepped through into the darkness of the hall, gently shutting the door with a silent snap. He hadn't been completely dishonest with his sister. He had a plan. Eric and Elias were obsessed with crossing the barrier between worlds. If anyone could get them to safety, they could. A small request after so many years of service and sacrifice. The only problem would be getting her to leave Chester. As he turned away from the door, he nearly tripped over a figure sitting on the floor against the wall. Their eyes met, and the anguished concern written on Chester's aging features told Theodore his father had heard every word. They stared at one another for several moments, but instead of rebuking the man who had never been there for him, he swallowed his anger and his pride and pointed to the door he had just closed.
"You failed us as kids, but do right by her now, and I'll forgive you."
If there was a response, Theodore did not hear it or anything else over the rush of blood in his ears as he stormed away.
We thank you for joining us for this chapter of the novel Of Portals and Portents, Book 4 by Leslie Herron in this ongoing series available here on Tall Tale TV. You can find links in the description to where you can listen to all her books and novellas, with new chapters appearing as they are being written and recorded.
Listen, I,
Hi.
Hi there. Thank you for offering to let me use your palanquin, but,
Shush, your pretty little lips. Don't worry about it. Listen, from what I gather, you're still weak from a fever, right? Recovering? Helpless? It's the least I could do.
Do you really think there's enough room? It's kind of cramped with both of us.
You got a point, but don't worry, easy peasy. I'll just sit on your lap. Better? Just scooch like that.
Whoa,
All good.
Hey! Sorry, I changed my mind. I'll walk.
I wouldn't do that.
Stupid door open!
Wait, stop!
Oh, crap!
We're on a ledge, you moron! Dang it. Can it, you? Now we get to go back down there and try again. I was this close. I touched it.